Welcome to the Adventures in Civic Renewal series. This is a production of the Second Society Project. I am your host, David Schmidt. The Adventures in Civic Renewal series is part of an attempt to provide the listener with practical solutions and suggestions, thought-provoking ideas that might assist them as they search for ways of rebuilding their world, their family, and civic society around them. This episode is entitled Empty Bookcase Beginnings. In the past 30 to 40 years, there have been numerous occasions where I have engaged in conversation with parents, a single parent, or a grandparent, and they express frustration with the academic, social, or psychological development of their son, daughter, or grandchild. There is concern about the offspring's perceived aimlessness, their lack of intellectual curiosity, their involvement with drugs, itself a symptom of intellectual and emotional distress, or the young person's experience with psychiatric, psychopharmacological intervention, or their having experienced marital strife. Since many of those conversations occurred, the COVID Great Reset phenomenon fell upon us. This has only exaggerated the crisis. Indeed, we've lost many young people in the past year to the distress which the lockdown created in their lives, not to mention the use of masks, which were a technique of dehumanization, and also the social distancing that deprived them of essential social interaction, so critical for people of that age. To be sure, the very best time to begin assisting an offspring's progression toward a successful life is as early as possible, dare I say, even before conception. But perhaps that is for another episode of the Second Society podcast. But there is no need to be discouraged if it is a decade or two later, or even six decades. It is simply a bit more difficult to begin later. But do we shy away from difficulty? No, we don't. Start wherever you or they are. We are there too, together. The best time to act is now, so that we can all contribute to the critical rebuilding of our civic life. Our society needs to focus a young couple's attention on providing materially for their expected family, and hopefully it will be a large family. And this is certainly practical and wise. But if the focus is disproportionately on the material, it complies all too well with the goals of a society that is being directed toward its doom. Do I need to say it? The goals of the elites are hostile to people, to nations, and to sound human development and education. They may use pleasant-sounding words, but in the end, they do everything that undermines the protection and the fostering of human goods. To put it another way, the elite people behind these globalist forces have no interest in your raising a healthy family. As always, there is no they must in the solution, only we will. We can't expect there to be some savior, some white knight, some politician who will come and save us. We must do it ourselves. We must begin with our individual persons. It must expand to our families and our friends, our neighborhoods. We need to work locally while we think globally. We can take charge of this ship of civilization. We need to make an amazing turnaround in the narrative that we want, a narrative of recapturing our civilization. Sometimes pious encouragements, as nice as they may be, are frustrating in the lack of how-to advice. That's what this Adventures in Civic Renewal hopes to address. So where do we start in fostering the development and education of a child, or an adolescent, or ourselves? Before I continue, I want to say something extremely important to you who are parents or guardians. You are the primary educator of your offspring. The government has proven itself to not only be a poor educator, but to be a malicious one at that. There is no external substitute for the parent as loving moral guardian and the primary educator of a child. Parenting is the single most important, as well as exciting and rewarding, job that anyone will ever have, bar none. So, what am I here to offer? I was a teacher and professor. I know something about learning. I know a little bit about some particular disciplines, in my case, neurobiology, behavior, and biology in general. I was awarded a doctorate in philosophy. I am charged with the responsibility of learning deeply, of being diligent in my investigations, and as effectively as possible to making that learning available to you. That's not an act of arrogance, but rather an act of generosity, of self-sacrifice, and of self-donation. A PhD's job is not to idly entertain or to tell you what you want to hear or to serve established powers. My job is to help you to unlock the joys of the intellectual life. And everybody has an intellectual life. The intellectual life is not something that belongs to eggheads or to people who sit around smoking unfiltered cigarettes and wearing berets. My job is not to provide job training either, although certainly skills in a job are worthwhile. But rather, I am here to ask you to join me in rebuilding a society, or building a society, perhaps in ways that it never existed, where the artificial barriers to people engaging in plentiful work need to be removed, and where together we can learn the virtues that are both natural and are graced through the Christian life. If you are willing to try something that might seem unorthodox or unconventional, perhaps I can help. If it's the orthodox and conventional that you seek, then let me ask you, has the current American educational system helped or hurt your offspring? Has it left them prepared, or has it left them essentially disabled? As fascinating and as valuable as electronic media is, with certain indispensable enabling powers, this technology must be balanced with non-electronic means to ensure privacy, personal independence, political independence, ecological integrity, and as well as spiritual and psychological health. To this end, I suggest that we need books, print media, analog media, and we need to make use of them. We need to read those books. We need to transmit those tools of learning to the next generation. You can hardly give your son, daughter, or yourselves a much better gift than to introduce them to a life of serious reading. Few things are more pleasurable, comfortable, convenient, environmentally sound than reading a good paper book. Additionally, paper books are stable and indelible instantiations. These are fortresses of thought. They can be accessed and enjoyed privately without the prying eyes of technocratic spies and tyrants. Physical libraries of paper books will always be the fundamental means of doing scholarly work and of protecting ideas and political freedom. With paper books protected, digital technology can serve its subsidiary supporting role. In this past year, online pundit and observer of culture James Corbett and James Evans Pilato suggested that we each independently work to preserve an archive of important documents, books, physical media, plastic records, tapes, to preserve these for future generations. The centralization of our means of communication, of recording history, of analyzing events, of providing evidence of what happened in the past. If these are all centrally controlled, they're easily destroyed or altered. James Corbett and James Evan Pilato suggest something called the Library of Alexandria Project. It's really good. I suggest that you look up that material, that discussion that they had. It should be easily accessible at thecorbettreport.com. So let's talk about then building a library for yourself or for your children or for your grandchildren. And I hope this will be a library that you intend to pass on to future generations as well after them. Where do you start? Well, oftentimes we get the cart before the horse. And sometimes we ignore the simple things which can really bring us a profound solution. There's an old proverb called "for want of a nail." And you've probably heard it. You know it. You're familiar with it, I'm sure. For want of a nail, the horseshoe was lost. For the want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For the want of a horse, the rider was lost. For the want of the rider, the message was lost. For want of the message, the battle was lost. For want of a battle, the kingdom was lost. All for the want of a horseshoe nail. So let's begin small. Let's begin in a counterintuitive manner. Let's not start by asking, how do I acquire a whole library? Let's begin with an empty bookshelf. Now, you may not intend, nor may you ever achieve, nor would you be happy to achieve what I've done, which is a house in which every wall has essentially been covered with bookshelves. I enjoy it. I needed it. It's also helped, by the way, with my heating and air conditioning bills, because it makes pretty good insulation on the outside walls. But no, I'm here to help you at least get started with a modest library. And what I suggest to you is, begin by acquiring for yourself at an old bookstore or even a big box store, an inexpensive bookshelf. An empty bookshelf. Fix it to the wall for safety reasons so that it doesn't tip over, and make it attractive, and make sure that you simply don't fill it with knickknacks. Leave it open like a gaping wound and watch just how quickly that you begin to fill it with good things. Where would you start? Well, I can tell you where I would start. It's not where you have to start. On my top shelf, you know, I would have a Bible and maybe a catechism, a concordance, some other religious books that I find assist me in the philosophical and devotional parts of my life, religious life. But then very quickly, I would also make sure that that shelf has one book that assists all other disciplines, and that is a dictionary, a good dictionary. I recommend the American Heritage Dictionary. The American Heritage Dictionary has a great advantage of being very a very good tool for etymology. The revealing to the reader of the parts of a word and their, particularly their Latin or Greek roots, in some cases, other sources like Anglo-Saxon, what have you, Indo-European roots of words. But at any rate, get yourself a dictionary and then maybe other dictionaries, dictionaries of other languages, a thesaurus, maybe a book on grammar. And let this be your shelf that houses your tools for thinking and speaking and writing and reading. And then you can go on from there. What's your particular interest? Maybe you're a farmer. There's books on farming. Maybe you're a philosopher. Everybody should be a little bit of a philosopher. Find books that suit your interests and your needs. Go from there. An Encyclopedia Britannica fills up another shelf or two. So I think I've given you some ideas on where to start. Turn on the light in your house. Turn on the light with an empty bookshelf. When I was teaching, I was amazed to find during those years, because I was attuned to what goes on, I was sort of amazed when I would visit the homes of friends or neighbors, and I would see that their home was absolutely not equipped for reading. There were no reading lamps. The lighting was poor. The only lighting that would be on would be that from the television in the evening. So I'm suggesting to you that these are some things that as a society we do well to change. And those who have ears to hear what I'm saying can be the forerunners in that change. I hope this has been helpful to you. Please, in the comment box, feel free to make additional suggestions. I will elaborate a little bit more as planned on the topic of dictionaries, one of my favorites. I will also be providing, God willing, additional tools in this Adventures in Civic Renewal.